Boom!
There was a loud crashing sound, and then there was a pause for about a split second, and then there was like a scream or two, and then everyone just ran. Everybody. There was mass chaos.
The smoke, the black smoke and fire.
Hijacked, and there are indications that it may have been a Boeing 767 out of Boston.
Like a train rumbling for maybe like 35 seconds, and then there was like this pause, and then boom, hit with all the dust, and it was black, I mean pitch black. I don't know if anybody could survive being on the street at that time.
You can see the black smoke billowing out of the side of the Pentagon. It continues to billow out and cover much of the skyline here along the area, drifting along the Potomac River, casting a haze all over the Pentagon area.
It didn't look like there was a plane at all. It was just obliterated when it hit the ground.
He told me he was putting a plan together that he and others were going to take back the airplane. And he said, you know, Dina, I think we can do it. It's up to us.
And we will strive now very hard to save as many people as possible and to send a message that the city of New York and the United States of America is much stronger than any group of barbaric terrorists.
All of the suspects right now that I know that the U.S. is looking at are in the Middle East. And frankly, we have to put Osama bin Laden at the top of the list.
We will make no distinction between the terrorists who committed these acts and those who harbor them.
We've got to do something now and do it immediately. I mean, we're entitled to some semblance of security, some semblance of rationality, and I think that all died in New York. I've been in the city for years, and I've never heard of the silent and the sad as I've heard it tonight. This city is in shock, and unless you're here tonight, you don't quite comprehend it.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
With liberty and justice for all. Good evening, Global Patriots. You're listening to Global Patriot Radio, the Vito Esposito Show. I'm Vito. Happy Labor Day. Our call-in number tonight in every Global Patriot radio night is area code 319-527-6706. That's area code 319-527-6706. And I'm joined by that patriotic no-pork-eating America lover, Al. Good evening, Al. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing terrific. Glad to be here, and how are you?
I'm doing good, thanks. I'm doing good. It's Labor Day. Had, you know, little rest and relaxation today.
Yes, comrade.
Yeah. The unofficial start to the end of summer and the start of fall. And
always good. We need a little change of weather.
Yeah. Played a little golf this morning, and it was hot. It was hot. How about you?
Excellent. How'd you shoot?
I shot 3 under today. I played well.
Fantastic.
Yeah. How about you?
Yeah, well, had to take care of some business. A lease on one of our cars is ending. So Our plan was 3 years ago, we're going to lease this car. And then after the lease was over, we'd move into another lease. But it ends up, there is this huge chip shortage, if you didn't know. And
yes.
Inventory in automobiles is non-existent. So we ended up, there was no other leased vehicle that we could go into by the time our lease was up. So we were caught in between a rock and a hard place. So we had to make some pretty quick decisions, all because of this chip shortage, primarily coming out of because of the chip manufacturers weren't outsourcing enough, and because of this pandemic, they stopped production, and the repercussions are being felt all over the world, whether you're buying appliances, cars, anything. You can't even get a PlayStation for the kids. It's absolutely amazing how one item, an electronic chip, can literally shut down the economy and commerce in many different sectors. It's sobering.
What did you end up doing?
And costly. We ended up buying the car.
Really?
But the value of, believe it or not, the value of the lease had gone up a couple of $1,000. So we'll wait 6 months or so, and then maybe we'll resell it and see if we can get out of it. But
wow,
we were forced to make a quick decision, big ticket decision, all because of these damn chips.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, people don't realize that even the cost of renting a vehicle has skyrocketed. I had some friends that tried to rent a vehicle, and, you know, it was like $400 a week where, you know, it was atrocious what the cost was to rent a vehicle. And that's, again, there are no vehicles. Everybody's running short. Wow.
Yeah, we didn't have this problem 12 months ago. In fact, it was just the opposite. All within the last 8 or 9 months, everything's gone to the crapper, as they say.
Well, you know, and it's funny, on this Labor Day, where, you know, you're supposed to celebrate the and recognize the American labor movement, you know, you've got an anti-capitalist. We have two anti-capitalists and two anti-free enterprise individuals in the White House, you know, the bumbling buffoon Biden and hapless Harris. And, you know, here we have, you know, inflation, chip shortages, vehicles, you know, you can't, what is it, used cars are at a premium, and you've got, you know, new cars are scarce, and man, I'll tell you, this guy has been an absolute disaster in everything he touches. Oh my God, including the Solheim Cup. I mean, talk about making America mediocre again. But PGA. Did you watch the FedEx Cup this past weekend?
Of course.
It was a FedEx Championship. It was the last tournament of the season, tactically, and it was held at Eastlake Country Club in Atlanta, Georgia. And America's Patrick Cantlay started with the lead at 10 under par. This playoff system rewards how you finish. So you have to finish, you know, in the top five to really have a good chance. You start to get 10 under par for number one. Number two, Tony Finau started in second place at 8 under. Bryson DeChambeau, third place at 7 under. John Rahm in fourth place at 6 under. And down at 2 under par was this American Kevin Na and Justin Thomas started at 4 under. Well, Patrick Cantlay, America's Patrick Cantlay, he never relinquished the lead. I mean, there was charges put on him. They, you know, and who rose to the top was John Rahm. John Rahm's playing fantastic golf. He stayed within a shot or two shots of Patrick Cantlay all weekend, including he was two shots behind going into Sunday's round, yesterday's round. But Patrick Cantlay, man, they had Patty Ice. This guy, this young man, has got it, man. He held on. Last week he wins. He holds on to beat DeChambeau, and then this week he holds off John Rahm, and it was incredible because by Saturday the two leaders, the two men, Patrick Cantlay and John Rahm, they distanced themselves from DeChambeau, Finau, Justin Thomas, and Kevin Na. Brooks Koepka had a withdrawal on Saturday. I don't know if you saw that though. What happened to him on Saturday?
I heard about it.
Yeah, he swung. He had a ball in a rough, and he was under a tree or near a tree, swung, hits a root, and hurts his wrist. And the issue with that is he was out for 6 months, at least 6 months, with a wrist injury a couple of years back. He had wrist surgery. So to hit a root, man, that's just, I felt bad for him. I mean, he tried to play the next, he shot out, he tried to play the next hole, and he teed off, and once he hit a bunker shot, that was it. He was done. So, and hopefully he's okay. But his Ryder Cup is in jeopardy. But in the end, it came down to the 18th hole yesterday. Patrick Cantlay had a one-shot lead over John Rahm. Both hit fantastic drives in the par 5 18th hole. Cantlay outdrove Rahm, which was kind of surprising. And then both went for the green and two on the par 5, and they hit great shots in. Rahm was first to play. His ball went right past the pin and up the green and probably about 20, 21 feet, but in the rough, in the fringe area. And then Patrick Cantlay from, 209, you said, hit a 6-iron to, 14 feet. And Rahm needed to chip in for an eagle, and he didn't. He nestled it up there at about a 2-footer, and all Patrick Cantlay had to do was 2-putt to win, and he won $15 million.
a hard earned amazing $15 million. But you got one thing, and Rahm, he started the tournament at 6 under par. Cantlay was at 10. Now, granted, they earned those spots, but still, Rahm made up 4 strokes on that course, that competition. I think Rahm got, I don't know, I just don't like that format. I got a problem with the format. That's all.
You do, huh?
I do. Yeah. So does that chicken.
I don't know what
he's waking
I don't
the
know
world
what
up
the...
to that problem.
You know, well, yeah, but see, liberals like that because they're given something. You know, they give them something. You don't have to necessarily
earn. Well, it's earned. No, I mean, it's earned. You're number one in the points, so they had number one. If people don't know, the top player started the tournament at 10 under, which is really good. The next player was 9 under and 8 under on down. John Rahm is 6. But it was based on points, so it would seem to me that if you have the players in the tournament and that the points, whatever the points are, everybody plays wherever their standing is, but whoever comes out with the most points after that one tournament wins the FedEx Cup. That to me would be more fair. I mean, what do you think?
I have to agree with you on that part of it. I know that the PGA is fishing and trying to come up with a good idea, and you know this seems like a cure for them. But I do like the points. You know, why do you have a point system during the entire year? And you know what? You reward the person who plays the best during the entire year. And if the person folds, you know, during the championship, like the FedEx Championship, you know, someone else rises to the top. You know, look at Kevin Na. Kevin Na was 2 under to start the week. He was 2 under, and he comes back and he gets to 16 under par. And he finished 5 shots out, but he made up 14 shots.
Normal tournament, he would have won it.
Rahm would have
won it possibly.
Right. Right.
But you know, unless you're really into it, you're probably going, "What the hell are these guys talking about?" But it's kind of an interesting discussion over a few beers.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, it was a good tournament. It's an interesting format. It's just on the other side of the coin, you look at how Cantlay played, and Cantlay played very well. He held on. He held off Rahm. They can say all they want to say, but I think he did it in Tiger Woods fashion to win back-to-back under this type of pressure. You know, that speaks very well. And he could be the hot player for the week or for this year, but he certainly has a really good game, and he's a very talented individual. And so is Rahm. But got to say, I think what happens is I think Cantlay frustrates everybody because of his play.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly,
what do you mean?
Because he's got a simple swing. He's very measured. He's got a simple approach, and I don't say simple. I shouldn't say simple, you know, swing, but he's got a very good swing. He's got it's very sound. And I think he frustrates people because he's very quiet in his approach. And in doing so, you know, you've got these flamboyant guys like DeChambeau, and Rahm is, you know, has this type A personality. And here you got this guy who's like, he's like on one when he's walking, but he's so calculated, and he just kind of frustrated. All of a sudden, boom, he bangs a drive just past you, or, you know, he's first one to hit, he knocks it to 12 feet and then drains a 25 footer just when you think you got the door closed, you know? And that's really cool. That's what I meant.
Yeah. Well, he's steady.
Yeah.
He's the turtle versus the rat. Well,
yeah.
The turtle
rabbit,
slow
right.
and steady, and versus the rabbit. And it wasn't displayed any better than in the DeChambeau Cantlay finish.
Yeah.
Last week.
Last week.
Or 2 weeks ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
Week before that. But anyway, it's great golf. Great fun to watch. And I think the people who don't even play golf enjoy it. Because I know that our listeners love golf now, even if they didn't like it before.
Yeah. I mean, and then the women had the Solheim Cup that pits the USA against Europe.
Oof.
And the European women, you know, dominated the USA women. And they kept the Solheim Cup. And Olga just told me it was 14-13. All the European women needed was 14 points to retain the cup, and they did. I think they dominated the American women all weekend. Especially in the doubles matches. For some reason, in team play, the Europeans know how to play team play, and the United States does not. And I hope this is not a precursor to what we're going to see in the Ryder Cup at the end of September. But today's single matches were exciting, except again, the European women were leading at one point in 8 matches out of 12. I mean, that's and as good as the American women are, they got manhandled again. So too bad.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
Yep, Team America is getting spanked on the women's side. So
hey, but that's Joe Biden's Make America Mediocre Again.
President Biden, cheerleader for the American team on the Solheim Cup.
I'm not sure he can even say it, bumbling Biden. College football's back. Last week kicked off college football 2021 season. Alabama, ranked number one, played Miami, destroyed them 44-13. And, you know, Bama comes in with a new quarterback and a new offensive coordinator, and they didn't miss a beat. I love this offensive coordinator. I think Bill O'Brien is fantastic. You hear about how Bama just retools, but you look at number 3, Clemson, who played Georgia with a new quarterback at the helm, with Trevor Lawrence going pro, leaving this past year. Clemson loses to Georgia, scoring an anemic 3 points. Clemson was in the same position as Bama, and Bama comes out firing at all cylinders. And, you know, it's funny, watching that game, it was like the receiver and the quarterback have been playing together for like 4 years. There was so much chemistry. And Clemson came out flat. And on Hank's show, we did a little bit of talking to it with Hank's brother. And the one thing that I asked Hank's brother about, you know, what would happen with Clemson coming out, you know, new quarterback, you know, are they going to do anything? And they didn't do anything. They just kind of folded. But that also speaks to the Georgia Bulldogs' defense, too. Should be pretty good.
Yeah, there's a bit of a difference between Georgia and Miami.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Alabama looked like a well-oiled machine. The quarterback is quick, fast, and his passing is phenomenal.
Bigfoot's Virginia Tech beat North Carolina in a melee bowl.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Big upset.
Hey, Virginia Tech looked great, and they handled, you know, North Carolina. I think Virginia Tech might be back, and I understand there was a melee in the stands. Some Virginia Tech dad got pissed at a North Carolina or a student or vice versa, and fisticuffs ensued. Police came in, arrested the guy, the older man who punched the student. But Virginia Tech looked great big, so it looks like they're going to be forced in the ACC this year. Oklahoma squeaked by Tulane 40-35. All this talk about Oklahoma. Ohio State dispatched the Minnesota team. Ugh. 45-31, so Minnesota's in trouble. Ohio State looks good. Iowa State beat Northern Iowa 16-10. Hank's Iowa Hawkeyes beat Indiana handedly 34-6. That's a conference game, too. UCLA beat LSU 38-27. Good for UCLA. Bad for LSU. Oof. SEC lost to the Pac-10, Pac-12. The Gators of Florida beat Florida Atlantic 35-14. Penn State, the Nittany Lions, beat Wisconsin 16-10. Oh, baby, that was a good win. And that was a conference game, too.
Yeah, maybe their curse is over. Who knows?
Well, and sadly, I must say this. The Notre Dame Irishmen beat your FSU Seminoles, Florida State, 41-38 in overtime. But, Al, what was the takeaway of that game?
The takeaway is that, in my opinion, that was the most exciting game of the weekend. The Florida State quarterback, if you recall, three and a half years ago, he had his kneecap shattered, leg broken. 3 years, they said he'll never come back and play. Well, McKenzie did. 3 years later, through a lot of pain and arduous rehab, he made it back. And the first half, they had their redshirt freshman, Florida State did. They were behind. McKenzie Milton came in at the second half, a little after the third quarter, and then came in, scored 16 points right away. A spark was felt in the offense, and he took it to Notre Dame. They came back within a field goal, tied the game, went into overtime, and then, unfortunately, Florida State missed the field goal. Notre Dame came back and then made the field goal. Game was over, but I still think that was the most exciting game of the weekend, and kudos to the Florida State Seminoles, unranked, giving the ninth-ranked Notre Dame a little bit of a heartbeat problem. They were nervous and scared. And then the coach of Notre Dame had a PC meltdown moment.
What happened? Tell.
Well, he was very upset with the way that Notre Dame played. He made the comment. He said that every team member should be executed because they could not execute a play. I don't think it was all that bad, but it seems the PC police thought that was the worst thing that could ever be said. And mayhem ensued on Twitter and Facebook and all of social media. And the coach of Notre Dame was nothing but a Neanderthal.
Hey, you know, it was interesting that McKenzie Milton did really well, though. I mean, he was from the University of Central Florida, transfer, injured his leg really bad during the USF game, I believe, University of South Florida game. And I thought it was a cheap shot.
Well, I don't know. It was just, they said player put the helmet to the knee. I don't know if it was intentional, but, you know, it's football. Those things happen.
It does. And he almost lost that leg. I mean, and then he had, while during rehab, he got an infection in the knee and had to be re-hospitalized. And he was in the hospital for like a month. So,
where they were playing against USF, they had the number one trauma center in the country for that type of surgery, and they happened to be playing in right outside of Tampa. So right after, they rushed into the emergency room, and one of the doctors, who was one of the top vascular surgeons in the country, was on staff there and saved his legs. Quite an amazing story when you put all the pieces together. It's all the data point. It's great. It's a great story.
Yeah, very good. Yep, it was a good story. Yeah. So speaking of good stories, here's one. I don't know if you caught this, but bumbling Biden was holding a press conference, but he was talking about, it was Hurricane Ida. So it was an emergency preparedness, and they were talking about how they were organizing the Hurricane Ida in Louisiana, you know, preparedness for the hurricane that was going to hit. And, you know, it was looking pretty bad, 180 mile an hour sustained winds. And this thing was coming up the Gulf of Mexico. And, you know, how can you say this? I'm just going to say it. You know, the left wing falsely accused President Trump of being a racist. They manufactured lies, fictitious lies, that President Trump was a racist. Now, obviously, the reason for that was they were scared of him. They needed to make sure that they tried to denigrate him, you know, and remove his base and, you know, delegitimize the man. And those false accusations went on for 3.5 years. In comes the buffoon Biden, who is a racist. I mean, one of his best friends in the Senate was other than Robert KKK Byrd, the Grand Dragon, you know, involved in the KKK. I don't know if he was a Grand Dragon. That's what was one report. But Biden has a propensity for saying racist things. And, of course, the media then goes deaf. They go mute. But, you know, Google, I should say YouTube, still does exist in some fashion and until they start removing videos. But here is Joe Biden in his own racist words. We heard it back in April after Hideki Matsuyama won the Masters, and you've got Biden speaking to the Prime Minister of Japan, and he calls Hideki Matsuyama Japanese boy, and nothing, no hysteria from the phony and fake DNC media. And again, we have a situation of bumbling Biden in a racist moment, and of course the media goes absolutely silent. So here's the bumbling buffoon Biden, in his own words, talking about a Louisiana, former Louisiana congressman who is one of his senior advisors. He's a senior black advisor, and his name is Cedric Richmond. And this is what bumbling Biden thinks of. Well,
good afternoon, everybody. We're waiting for a few more people to get on, but we're going to get started, if that's okay with you all. And thanks for joining me. I'm here. The FEMA director is on. FEMA director, Chris Wells, she's on. And I'm here with my senior advisor and boy who knows Louisiana very, very well, man, and New Orleans, and Cedric Richmond. And what I'm going to do is make a brief statement here and then go through and tell you.
So Al, there's no hysteria by the media. So there's no racist outrage. There's no cries of racism. So I guess what we have learned now since January 20th, 2021, that racism no longer exists in America, that now that President Trump is gone, bumbling Biden is free to say anything he pleases, and there's no accountability by the DNC media for, again, his offensive rhetoric. When he goes off teleprompter, his true colors come out, and his true colors is being a racist. I cannot believe it, honestly. I mean, we sat there for 4 years. We had to listen to these phony and trumped up charges on President Trump, which for what, 45 years of 50 years of business, never once was there an issue of racism. His trusted advisor, who's worked with him for 30 something years, is black. You know, and he's got Jewish people working for him. His daughter's married to a Jew, and you've got all this noise from the left wing in order to denigrate President Trump, and then you have a real racist with Joe Biden, who embraces, you know, these racist individuals like Robert KKK Byrd, and there's crickets. Nothing. This boy, Cedric Richmond, calls him a boy. His senior black advisor calls him a boy. Where's the outrage? And not boy, who's in the chat room, by the way, but boy.
Well, you're a good boy. Come on. You didn't mean anything.
Oh, yeah.
Come on, corn pop.
Yeah, popcorn. I'm sure he was eating popcorn. He decided to change it to corn pop, you know, knowing that buffoon. Then you have,
in this day and time, there's no excuse. You cannot say that, call someone a boy, and get away with it unless you're a Marxist.
Yeah, and look at the hysteria over Brian Kelly's comments about executing his team. You know, they're going absolutely apocalyptic on the guy for apocalyptic, going crazy on the guy for having to actually saying that. I mean, can you imagine a coach coaching and saying that? I mean, here's a coach that's been coaching for what, 40 years, 30 years? And it's unbelievable. The selective outrage by these frauds and these phonies. And if anybody that should be outraged, it should be how Biden treats people. And this is not an isolated incident. This is a chronic condition with this guy, because Biden is really a racist. And the left, who falsely accused and manufactured fictitious charges against President Trump, okay, just because they hated Trump. And now they're excusing a racist tone. And you know what else? They're excusing the man and his actions, including what he says. I mean, now his famous slogan right now, okay, his newest slogan is "No man left behind." He used it during the botched evacuation in Afghanistan. Then, of course, had to change it. Anybody who wants to get out can get out. And then he said, we're going to leave no man left behind. And then during Hurricane Ida, during one of his teleprompter readings, the empty soundbite came out again about no man being left behind concerning the victims of Hurricane Ida. I mean, this guy is an absolute phony and a fraud, and the DNC media is certainly controlling the narrative, and they're doing a tremendous disservice. But like you said, that's the Marxist mentality. That's how you condition people. You condition people with this phony and fraud who's in the White House, who is a racist, and he's an empty suit. The man is absolutely empty with these phony and false sound bites right out of the page book of Barack Hussein Sator Obama. Just throw out these empty sound bites. Make sure that they put them up on the teleprompter so the buffoon can read from that teleprompter. And hopefully he doesn't go off of script, because when he does, that's when they have to hold their breath. But they know that they have useful idiots in the media who will protect the buffoon from when he starts babbling and when he starts going off script.
Well, it wasn't even a one-off. This is a pattern of behavior, because he even made similar comments about Barack Hussein Obama, saying that he was a clean, well-spoken person. And when you say call somebody clean, that is a racial reference, and he got away with that. So that shows a pattern of behavior. Even his son Hunter was shown to use the N-word many times in his laptop computer tapes.
That's right. And can you imagine if they had recordings of any of the Trump children, you know, using the N-word and calling anybody and calling anybody certain names? I mean, this is just it's not just a double standard. It's sickening is what it is. And it shows the decline that we're in at this point. And it shows how disingenuous the media is in this country. The Democrat Party controls the media. It's the same sick individuals in the media who vilify anything that's deemed to be right or on the right, including religion. I mean, it's just it's incredible what we are seeing today, and it's really sad because people like Biden should be summarily, they have been summarily rejected, but the idea is now, the idea was to get Trump out of office, and they put an empty suit, a brainless individual, and then they put hapless Harris with them, and they are both an absolute disaster. I mean, hell, we haven't even heard from Communist Kamala since she laid a wreath at her fellow communist monument, Ho Chi Minh. I mean, one hole lauding another. It's amazing. Have you heard anything more about, a Communist Kamala? Haven't heard a word from her, have you?
Nope, not a thing. Just nothing.
I mean, they have buried her as quickly as they buried the Afghan story. I mean, the Afghan story now has been buried under the proverbial White House prayer rug. And it's like it doesn't exist. And now we have issues with the Taliban holding Americans hostage. And you have the Taliban still going house to house looking for Americans. Looking for Americans. Oh, well, there's only 100 Americans there. Bullshit. Yeah, multiply that times 10. There are Americans there who could not get out. And then, of course, the Taliban has the names of the of Americans who are there because the bumbling Biden administration gave the Taliban the names.
Yeah.
So,
and we haven't heard stories from
nothing.
We haven't heard stories from any of the Americans that were in country that did leave at the last minute or were rescued. Normally, we'd hear their stories all over the media. There's been silence on that.
Well, I heard Rob O'Neill talking to Chris Salcido. And Salcido asked O'Neill what of his sources say. And O'Neill stated that what did he say? He said that there are Americans who are being detained, okay, by the Taliban, and that the bumbling Biden State Department has denied any request from what were they Maserat, I believe there are yeah. So the State Department is pushing back on helping any Americans stranded and taken hostage by the Taliban terrorists. The Taliban has cut off communications, including internet. And can you imagine the oppressive, fundamental, devout Islamic organization cut off communications? So anybody who's stranded there, Americans or British foreign nationals, you're stranded. You're stranded. You've got the bumbling Biden and hapless Harris administration pulling military out and then leaving citizens stranded there. And then, of course, you have this oppressive and despotic, theocratic Islamic organization who is nothing but a bunch of terrorists who cut off all resources such as the internet and other communication so that these people can't be – They can't call out. They can't call for help. And then you've got Biden sitting there saying, well, anybody who wants to leave can leave. Baghdad Bob Jinsaki. Well, those Americans who want to leave can leave. Oh. And now the State Department is pushing back on helping any Americans because there's nobody there, no one to send there. A congressman from Texas sent a team, okay, a mercenary type team to save three of six Americans with kids to get them, walk them out of the country. There's still three people that are not out. He got six out or he got three out and there's still six there. I was listening to a show today, a congressman from Texas. He hired his own mercenary group to help these Americans get out and their kids get out of Afghanistan. And now you've got Biden sweeping this whole thing under the rug and talking about everything else but Afghanistan. It's unconscionable that we have this type we have this much of a disaster in the White House from this type of inept leadership. And that's what it is. It's absolutely and it's grossly inept. I mean, you've got President Trump, who laid out an exit strategy for leaving Afghanistan, laid it out. And all this buffoon Biden had to do was follow it. And you know what? You put politics aside. We're talking about American lives. We're talking about American military lives. We're talking about the soldiers' lives, okay? We're talking about Americans who are for whatever reason in Afghanistan, whether they're contractors, they're contracted, they're CIA, they're government workers. You try to protect them. And you find a way to get those Americans out. And all Biden Harris had to do was just follow the exit strategy and get everybody out and declare victory. But now you remove the military, you get and you have Americans stranded and now being held hostage. And you know what? This is a 3 minute and 30 second clip. This is what President Trump outlined for leaving Afghanistan, that all the buffoon Biden had to do was follow it. Just follow it. Put your politics aside. Put your pettiness aside. But you see, this is how sick the Democrat Communist Party truly is.
After many meetings over many months, we held our final meeting last Friday at Camp David with my cabinet and generals to complete our strategy. I arrived at three fundamental conclusions about America's core interests in Afghanistan. First, our nation must seek an honorable and enduring outcome worthy of the tremendous sacrifices that have been made, especially the sacrifices of lives. The men and women who serve our nation in combat deserve a plan for victory. They deserve the tools they need and the trust they have earned to fight and to win. Second, the consequences of a rapid exit are both predictable and unacceptable. 9/11, the worst terrorist attack in our history, was planned and directed from Afghanistan, because that country was ruled by a government that gave comfort and shelter to terrorists. A hasty withdrawal would create a vacuum that terrorists, including ISIS and Al-Qaeda, would instantly fill, just as happened before September 11th. And as we know, in 2011, America hastily and mistakenly withdrew from Iraq. As a result, our hard-won gains slipped back into the hands of terrorist enemies. Our soldiers watched as cities they had fought for and bled to liberate and won were occupied by a terrorist group called ISIS. The vacuum we created by leaving too soon gave safe haven for ISIS to spread, to grow, recruit, and launch attacks. We cannot repeat in Afghanistan the mistake our leaders made in Iraq. Third and finally, I concluded that the security threats we face in Afghanistan and the broader region are immense. Today, 20 U.S.-designated foreign terrorist organizations are active in Afghanistan and Pakistan, the highest concentration in any region, anywhere in the world. For its part, Pakistan often gives safe haven to agents of chaos, violence, and terror. The threat is worse because Pakistan and India are two nuclear-armed states whose tense relations threaten to spiral into conflict, and that could happen. No one denies that we have inherited a challenging and troubling situation in Afghanistan and South Asia, but we do not have the luxury of going back in time and making different or better decisions. When I became president, I was given a bad and very complex hand. But I fully knew what I was getting into. Big and intricate problems. But one way or another, these problems will be solved. I'm a problem solver. And in the end, we will win.
You know, President Trump said, you know, you build the trust and you fight to win. And a rapid exit would end up predictable as to what would happen. A hasty withdrawal will only embolden Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and the Taliban. And they will fill that void or that vacuum. And in 2011, a hastily and mistakenly withdrew from Iraq. And in 2011, that Iraq withdrawal, if I'm not mistaken, 2011 would have been the Obama-Biden administration. So there is a history of bungling. There is a history of inept leadership, irresponsible and irrational leadership. And that 2011 is a repeat of what we just saw in 2021 with the same individuals leading the way to this gross, it's not even a misstep, this dereliction of duty. I mean, it was an absolute botching of Afghanistan. But again, there's a pattern here. There's a history because Obama, Biden botched Afghanistan. I'm sorry, botched Iraq, just like, you know, Biden, Harris, Obama botched Afghanistan. It's unbelievable. It's unconscionable what's happening right now.
Well, President Biden, he made a cascade of decisions that were very well calculated. I think President Biden got the outcome that he was looking for. And I think the actual winner in this and who was guiding President Biden was quite possibly China, because China has the most to gain by this unrest within Afghanistan.
Yes, they do.
And part of that, and it all comes down to rare earth metals. The Chinese government is, as we speak, is mining rare earth metals as fast as they can out of Afghanistan. They're taking it all. Now, keep in mind, the Chinese, they don't give a rat's ass about women in hijabs, women going to school, child marriages, the Taliban death squads going door to door, killing Americans or killing Afghanis that they don't like, or Muslims that aren't Muslim enough for the Taliban. They don't care about that. All that China is doing is giving money, and millions, hundreds of millions of dollars are being promised to the Taliban if they just let them take whatever resources they can get out of Afghanistan. Taliban get money, China gets these rare earth metals, and part of that goes to this chip shortage too. Rare earth metals are called rare earth metals because they're not mined everywhere. And China is basically cornering the market in rare earth metals, and this is part of the reason why. Now, why President Biden would allow to happen where China becomes the beneficiary of the decisions that he made, him and Milley and his generals made, and the chairmen of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, why they went along with it is criminal. Perhaps sedition might be the word of the day. Where is the Senate? Where is the House calling for an investigation?
Silent.
Nothing yet.
Nothing.
Silent.
Well, the the Unified Party, man. The Unity Party. They're all silent. Well, there's some outrage. I mean, there's some that are, they're mad. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, wow. We're really, you know, we're concerned about you being mad. Oh.
Yeah, but the media is also to blame. Like in my local paper, the headline reads, Taliban ground evacuee planes. So unless you've been sleeping under a rock, there's six planes, that you had talked about a little earlier. It's either 4 or 6. News stories are mixed on it, but either way, there's 4 to 6 planes in the northern Mazar-e al-Sharif airport.
Yes.
I probably butchered the name of it, up in northern Afghanistan, that are being literally held hostage. My local paper, this is how the headline went: Taliban ground evacuee planes. Let me repeat. Taliban ground evacuee planes, which sounds like, oh, Delta flights are grounded out of Newark Airport for whatever reason. Where the headline should be reading, Taliban holding American and Afghan refugees hostage.
You know?
And the whole world should have been, the brakes should have been put on. This should have been, this story should be the top of every news cycle, the 24/7 news, day after day. Americans held hostage in Afghanistan, and we're probably, what, on day 4 or 5 now?
Yeah, I think it's
and they
day,
should have the day counter,
day 5.
The day counter going like in Iran with Jimmy Carter. But
yeah,
that's how I see it.
Well, I think, you know, you're spot on. You're absolutely spot on, because what that tells you, what you just said, tells all you need to know about how dishonest the media is today, how dishonest the DNC media is in sanitizing, okay, this bumbling Biden for botching Afghanistan. I mean, how do you sit there? You consciously make an effort to basically to distract the American people by saying, you ground planes in Afghanistan that evacuees are on. You ground planes. Now, you know, you and I both know, had this been Trump or if this been Bush, the headline would have read, Taliban holding evacuees hostage on 4 planes, trapped in Afghanistan. How did the administration not see this coming? How could they abandon the American people? Are they going to pay the hostages? Are they going to pay the what's being asked? And no question. No. The Taliban just grounded 4 planes. You know, Belly put in there about how FedEx planes are being grounded. They're being grounded because there are no employees to work. Either they're calling in sick, they got COVID, or there are no employees. Maybe that's just it, too. Maybe there are employees at Mazar-e al-Sharif Airport that are on strike, or maybe it's a COVID issue and these planes are grounded. Maybe they don't have any, I don't know, maybe they don't have any cleaning crews, or maybe the baggage handling crews are out, or maybe the towers, you know, are in need of air traffic controllers. I mean, why are they grounded? Is there something mechanically wrong with the planes? Oh, wait a minute. They're not grounded. They're being held hostage. They're being detained by the Taliban terrorists who are wanting a ransom for those people that are on board, for those Americans who wanted to leave, okay? Because any American who wanted to leave can leave, right? That was the message for the last 2 weeks, okay? This is how the White House was spinning this. This is how Baghdad Bob Jinsaki was giving us a doublespeak. Well, anybody who wants to leave Afghanistan can leave. Oh, in the meantime now, this is the second time we've had reports where the State Department has denied any request for people to leave. The State Department's pushing back on Americans, on helping Americans. The State Department, the U.S. State Department, the bubbling Biden, hapless Harris State Department are pushing back on Americans wanting to leave Afghanistan. So that means that any American who wants to leave Afghanistan can't. And how does the media spin this buffoonery? How do they spin this botching of an evacuation? Well, the Taliban has grounded planes in Afghanistan and Mazar-e al-Sharif. Oh, that's simple then. Oh, they just grounded, Al. It could be a sandstorm. It could be that the employees, the Taliban Aircraft Union Association is on strike. Maybe that's it. Maybe there's not enough halal food to be distributed amongst the 4 airplanes that are being grounded. You know, how much is it going to cost to unground those planes, huh? I mean, there's already a pattern with with Obama, Biden, and paying terrorists, a terrorist state, Iran, $1.3 billion in cold, hard cash? And now you've got this bumbling Biden who botched Afghanistan, and Americans who want to leave can't leave? I mean, this is incredible. It is absolutely incredible. And you have now you have members of Congress who are paying out of their own pocket, okay, mercenaries to get Americans out of Afghanistan because of how bad bumbling Biden botched this while this buffoon now is on vacation. I mean, if President Trump would have went, yes, and I'm going back and I'm going to compare, because if President Trump would have went on vacation or when he went on vacation, they were, the news media was going hysterical. They were going nuts. Oh, can you believe he's golfing? Oh, he's with the Prime Minister of Japan golfing. Oh, can you believe what this man's doing? Oh, can you believe? Oh, well, you know what? Rome is burning, and the moron's playing a fiddle right now, and, you know, he's asleep at the wheel once again. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, and Biden is asleep at the wheel. The phone's ringing, and all he hears is bells in his head because he's that dense. This is an empty suit. This man is a fucking phony and a fraud, and you have Americans sitting on 4 planes in Afghanistan. You already have one plane that went missing because the State Department, that would be the hapless Harris and the buffoon Biden administration, State Department denied the request of Americans to leave Afghanistan. And where's the media reporting this? They're covering up this hapless individual. This man is a disaster. Joe Biden is nothing but a buffoon. That's the reason why he was summarily rejected all these years, and the establishment had to go in and install this failed and feckless individual. It's sickening. It's absolutely sickening that we have Americans stranded in Afghanistan. And last week, the message by these fucking frauds was that any American who wants to leave can leave. Well, there's Americans who wanted to leave, and they couldn't leave last week before August the 31st. And the Biden-Harris State Department was denying their request to leave. And now we've got 4 planes sitting on a runway. And how is it reported by the media? Well, the Taliban grounds evacuee planes. How much more can we sanitize this, okay? How much more can you sanitize this? Oh, my God.
You can't sanitize it. There's nothing to sanitize. You're either held hostage or you're not, period. Those planes cannot leave. They're being held against their will. The State Department is saying, oh, well, there are only Afghanis who don't have the proper paperwork. Representative Michael McCaul is quoted in news sources saying he's the top Republican on the U.S. House Foreign Affairs Committee, said Americans were on the planes, but the Taliban were not letting them take off, effectively, quote, holding them hostage. I'm sorry, Americans being held hostage by the Taliban, a terrorist organization, is front page news. And not that their planes were grounded, like a Delta Airlines flight got grounded at LaGuardia due to weather.
Right. Yeah. And Boyd saying that Fox News is claiming the State Department is denying rescue flights from leaving Afghanistan. The State Department.
And when is it the State Department's making – when does the State Department make those decisions as far as Americans, whether they can leave or not leave a country that is essentially broken and in war? And Americans
exactly.
are at danger of being more killed, murdered. I think that's above the State Department grade.
And remember, the narrative up until August the 31st – the narrative by the bumbling Biden, hapless Harris administration was very clear. If you want to leave Afghanistan, any American who wants to leave Afghanistan can leave. That was the narrative. That's what the State Department told us. That's what Baghdad Bob Jensaki said. And that's what the teleprompter reader Biden stated. Any American who wants to leave can leave. And, you know, it all sounds good. It all sounds good doesn't it? It's great soundbite. It's great material. You know what? It sounds like you care. And in reality, they abandoned Americans in Afghanistan. That's the reality of it. U.S. citizens were abandoned by their country, and their country is led by the person who they claim to be commander-in-chief, and that's Joe Biden. He bungled it. He botched it. He's nothing but a fucking buffoon. And it's really sad that we have come to this state. We have come to this time in our history that we have somebody as feckless as Joe Biden. There was a reason he was summarily rejected in 1988, because he's a plagiarizer and he's a fraud. This man is not qualified to be dog catcher of the United States, let alone president. And whoever put this man in, whoever installed this man, and Hapless Harris, Communist Kamala, is another idiot. She is an absolute dolt. And look how she's come off the radar. She's gone from the radar. She had two poor showings by fleeing the United States and going to Singapore and Vietnam. And here she is lauding Ho Chi Minh, who was the prime minister of the North Vietnamese during the Vietnam War, where the North Vietnamese were killing Americans, 54,000 to be exact. And she goes to the monument and lauds Ho Chi Minh. And look at this, a week later, you don't hear hide or hair from this broad. Nothing. No one's, not even a peep out of who Communist Kamala is. It's unbelievable what we're seeing, how this man could bungle, how this administration, from Biden to Milley to the Department of Defense chair, to the Joint Chiefs chair, to the Vice President, to the State Department, could bungle and botch this, leaving Americans behind. And for the media to sanitize this by, while the Taliban grounds evacuee planes at Mazar-e Sharif Airport. Okay.
And I blame the Republican Party establishment for being so damn quiet, even except for McCall. But McCall, yeah, he speaks. They listen to him, but it doesn't really – he doesn't have the punch. He needs more voices. He needs a chorus behind him. He's a lone singer.
There's two things that this whole thing tells me. Now we know this whole the attack on President Trump was absolutely fraudulent. It was manufactured. He's an outsider, and the inside did not want this man. One is the charge of racism. They falsely accused President Trump of being a racist, and now we have a real racist in the White House with Joe Biden. And it's not once, it's not twice. It's just an habitual and a chronic continuation of what this man really, how he really conducts himself, okay? And calling, you know, Hideki Matsuyama a Japanese boy, calling Cedric, former congressman from Louisiana, a boy. And then you have Nancy Pelosi, okay? Pelosi is nothing but a partisan, petulant individual. She's a partisan hack. And for someone who is the Speaker of the House, she is a louse. She truly is. She is nothing but a partisan hack. And she showed her true colors. You have somebody who fucked up Afghanistan evacuation just absolutely royally. I mean, absolutely royally screwed it up. Has royally screwed up the southern border and the influx of illegal, unvaccinated, infected aliens coming into the United States of America, being distributed around the entire United States, and we're seeing the spikes in the Chinese Communist Party virus all around the United States. And isn't it ironic that this administration is distributing illegal unvaccinated aliens around the United States, including into Texas and Florida, two Republican governors, by the way. And then you have what's happened in Afghanistan. And Nancy Pelosi is silent. She's not said a goddamn thing. And I told my friend I wouldn't use that word, and I'm sorry. Here it is. She has been absolutely silent. And then when she was kind of, I don't know, put into a corner, she decided that she would come out in defense of bumbling Biden. And it goes to show, Al, that she's a fraud. This establishment is nothing but a fraud. If you are an outsider and not of the same ilk as these corrupt cabal in D.C., they'll find any ways to make an excuse for an absolute and abject failure. And Joe Biden is an abject failure. This man is clueless as to what's going on. So they send him to go out and to go on vacation. And the buffoon is on vacation while Rome is burning. Americans are sitting in a plane at Mazar Sharif Airport, and they're being held hostage, and Biden's on vacation. And hapless Harris is nowhere to be found, and the Republicans are silent. This is all one-party system. There are a few outliers out there who get, you know, riled up, but of course they're squashed by the media. And in the meantime, you've got the Speaker of the House who had a comment for everything that Trump did, and she's silent. It goes to show how fraudulent the corrupt D.C. cabal truly is. And if you're not part of that system, they'll make excuses for you. And they're making excuses for one of their own, Senator Joe Biden. He's a good old boy. Just like Pelosi made excuses, you know, for incestuous Ilhan Omar, that anti-American, you know, fraud from Minnesota, okay? She defrauds the U.S. government. She marries her brother. She's been nothing but campaign violations out the ass. And you've got Nancy Pelosi coming out saying, well, you know, she doesn't have command of the English language when she starts making anti-Semitic comments. So, you know, if you're part of that cabal in Washington, D.C., you get a pass. And that's what's happening. The cover-up continues by the cabal in Washington, D.C. In the meantime, Americans are stranded. Americans are being held hostage. Americans are being sought out and tracked down by the Taliban terrorists. And either they will be killed on the spot if they find them hiding out in houses, or they'll be held hostage because they know that this feckless fraud, Biden, will pay some sort of ransom for Americans. If, in fact, you're lucky enough to be held hostage, or you're not taken as a human traffic if you're a female. Other than that, I have no comment whatsoever.
Well, Zabihullah Mujahid said in an interview published by the Italian newspaper La Repubblica on Wednesday, Mujahid said the Taliban admire China's Belt and Road Initiative because it will, quote, revive the ancient Silk Road. He added that the communist nation will help Afghanistan access global markets by fully utilizing its abundant copper resources. Copper resources. The Taliban also claimed its spokesman Abdul Salam Hanafi had a phone call with China's Deputy Foreign Minister Wu Zhenghu, who said China will be maintaining its embassy in Kabul, sought to beef up relations with the Taliban, and viewed Afghanistan as an important role in the region. So why in the world would President Joe Biden, get in the middle of that and threaten the Taliban with violence if they don't release the hostages? He can't do both. If he does that, China's going to be very upset with President Biden. The Taliban, nobody really cares what they think. They're just a small player. They're a pawn on this chessboard. But President Biden should be threatening the Taliban, I don't know, with raining metal fire on them, on their houses, and releasing all of these hostages and letting them go, but he's not doing it. And I think it's because he's afraid of China.
Well, he's already showed his hand. Okay, so this so apparently there's $3 trillion of resources that China has their hands on. And it was reported last week that China is going to capitalize on those resources, as you stated, okay, on those minerals. And look at this. They're building infrastructure. Where did this – wait a minute. Mm-hmm. Where did this happen before? What was the movie with James Bond when Daniel Craig came out. It was the one where he played cards, Vespa, and they were in Montenegro, I think it was, is where the game was. So China built the infrastructure and the roadways and helped build the infrastructure and roadways in Montenegro. And also China financed that. Okay. So Montenegro had to pay those bills. Okay. So guess what? Montenegro government was near default. And so China said, well, we'll just take some of your land. So here you have the same issue in Afghanistan. You have the Chinese willingly coming in, readily available, because they know that the United States is not going to go back into Afghanistan. How do we know that? Well, because you have the bumbling buffoon Biden, who stated that we're out of there, 20 years is long enough, and certainly it is. I don't disagree with that. I think we should have gotten out a long time ago. I think if we had the right leadership in Washington, D.C., you would have carpet bombed, you would have bombed the living crap out of them, and you would have absolutely annihilated them. But then again, President Trump was not president at the time, because that would have happened. With this guy, he doesn't have a backbone. And so really with Biden, the Chinese know they can control this guy. Why? All they have to do is start making more donations to the Biden Foundation. They've already made $70 million donation to the Biden Foundation. Okay. Nobody talks about that. The Chinese infused $70 million to the Biden Foundation, okay? $70 million. And, of course, the media is not talking about that. Oh, Chinese workers are building bridges in Croatia. There you go, Bigfoot thing, Croatia. The Chinese government has also purchased land in Africa on both the east and the west side of Africa. Why? They're putting ports and naval ports on the east side of Africa. It's closer to the United States. The Chinese are investing in New Zealand ports, into Australian ports. Why? Oh, well, you do the math, okay? You do the logistics of all this. And now in Afghanistan, they walk in. The Russians expended lives and billions and trillions of dollars. The United States has expended lives and trillions of dollars in Afghanistan. Not only that, we left behind Bagram Air Force Base, all right, Bagram Air Base, excuse me, and the United States dumped $100 million plus into building that base and building facilities there that were housing Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and Islamic terrorists that what? The Taliban released. So it's not as if the United States is going to walk back in there, especially when you have the bumbling Biden and the hapless Harris. It's not going to happen again. So the Chinese know this is perfect. First of all, the Taliban is going to protect the Chinese. You could easily tell who the Chinese are. Okay, very easy. And the Taliban is getting what? Yuan. They're getting yuan from China. They're going to build roads, which means that China's giving them money. And you know what? If the Taliban decides that they're not going to pay China, China has what? 1 billion people. They'll just go in and start cleaning house. They have no regard for human rights and human beings. They have no regards. The communists don't care about your feelings. The communists don't care about waving a rainbow flag. Do you think the communists care what sexuality you are? They don't care. So these heartless individuals are ruthless. And as if, you know, Afghanistan now, it's perfect. It's ripe. You have a destabilized country. And the Chinese know that they can walk in with $3 trillion of minerals at their hands. $3 trillion. And all the Taliban sees are dollar signs. They're going to get wealthy. I mean, it was an absolute blunder. One more point. Do you really think that back in July, had President Trump been in the White House at that time, and you had the Taliban starting to make inroads into Herat, do you think President Trump would have allowed the Taliban to take over Herat and then sit there and say, well, we didn't see that coming, and then move down into Kandahar and take over Kandahar? Do you really think that President Trump would have allowed that to happen? I mean, look what happened in Iraq. when the bumbling Biden and Obama administration hastily withdrew out of Iraq, and then you got the spawn of ISIS. I mean, and now they had to change the name of ISIS and add a K to it as if it's going to make a difference. These are devout fundamentalists who have the same agenda. I mean, and what did President Trump do? Showed no mercy, played their game, and absolutely annihilated ISIS. And put Iran on notice, and then took out Soleimani. Then took out al-Baghdadi. He takes out al-Baghdadi, and even the Muslim Brotherhood to this day are silent. 2 years later, and the Muslim Brotherhood in America is still silent over al-Baghdadi being taken out. Now, either al-Baghdadi is an Islamic terrorist, okay, that perverts the Islamic religion, or he's a fellow Muslim. Which is it? Well, he must be a fellow Muslim, according to the Muslim Brotherhood and their front groups like Connors' Care, okay, because they've not said a word about al-Baghdadi being taken out 2 years ago. And now you've spawned the reemergence of the Taliban by gutlessly cutting and running. There's no way, shape, or form that Trump would have allowed the Taliban to advance to Herat without being pushed back. And it wouldn't have been putting in more forces. It would have been absolute striking, okay, the Taliban and putting them on notice. You will not take over Herat. You will not take over Kandahar. But this buffoon Biden, you have the Taliban walking into Herat, walking into Kandahar, and then walking into Mazar-e Sharif. And it's like, it happened a lot quicker than we thought. But wait a minute, you planned for all the contingencies. So what is it? You planned for all the contingencies, and you didn't see this coming. And then no American will be left behind who wants to leave, and we have Americans stranded in Afghanistan, tracked down like dogs by the Taliban terrorists, and they're being detained. I'm sorry, they're being grounded in Mazar-e Sharif Airport. Which is it? I mean, what's going on? And the media here is silent. They're covering up for this absolute buffoon. Biden botched this, and look how even our allies are upset. And again, there's no reporting by the media. Makes sure they don't bring up the fact that even the British and the Germans had to call the Russians for help. Not the United States, Al. The Germans called the Russians for help. And the Russians here are finally, they're licking their wounds after being mired in a 20-year war in Afghanistan. And they've postured themselves to walk back into Afghanistan for other reasons. And they're helping the Germans. I mean,
that's ironic.
Isn't it?
Merkel called Vladimir, get my people out. Vladimir goes, we've been to Afghanistan. We got our ass kicked thanks to you Westerners. F you. You're on your own. But we'll look into it. Thank you, Angela. Das Vidanya.
Das Vidanya. Yet. Oh, my God.
The world's officially gone cuckoo.
It really
so
has.
So many strange bedfellows.
Yeah, you know what? And speaking of strange bedfellows, you got this. Here's CLE. She was, I don't know, is she a former Muslim or is she a Muslim still? I'm not sure, but.
Who?
Here's CLE.
She is an atheist.
She's an atheist?
As far as I know, yes.
Okay.
She left Islam and became an atheist. But she is a brilliant. She was Muslim, and they did a clitorectomy on her, female genital mutilation. She's a lesbian, so has an interesting worldview. Islam is not part of it, so she's a former Muslim. And she was under attack, under death for leaving Islam. and her commentary on Islamic doctrine and theology is a view from the inside, sharing it with us, the outside world. So take her words very, very seriously. She's a great resource.
Well, we have two clips, and this first clip is Hirsi Ali, who's talking about, is Islam a religion of peace? And I thought it interesting because and you eloquently gave a kind of a history or a biography on Hirsi Ali, and she is a great resource. She's well-spoken. And for someone who's had a fatwa on her head, and of course she's considered an apostate, so therefore there's a death sentence on her head. But here's Hirsi Ali. It's about a five-minute clip. Is Islam a religion of peace?
I was raised a practicing Muslim and remained one for almost half my life. I attended madrasas, that is Islamic schools, and memorized large parts of the Quran. As a child, I lived in Mecca for a time and frequently visited the Grand Mosque. As a teenager, I sympathized with the Muslim Brotherhood. At 22, while my family was living in Kenya, my father arranged my marriage to a member of our family clan, a man that I had never met. I ran away, made my way to Holland, studied there, and eventually was elected a member of the Dutch Parliament. Now I live in the United States. In short, I have seen Islam from the inside and the outside. I believe that a reform of Islam is necessary and possible, and only Muslims can make that reform a reality. But we in the West cannot remain on the sidelines as though the outcome of this struggle has nothing to do with us. If the jihadists win and the hope for a reformed Islam dies, the rest of the world will pay a terrible price. The terror attacks in New York, London, Madrid, Paris, and many other places are only a preview for what's to come. For this reason, I believe that it's foolish to insist, as Western leaders habitually do, that the violent acts committed in the name of Islam can somehow be divorced from the religion itself. For more than a decade, my message has been simple. Islam is not a religion of peace. When I assert this, I do not mean that Islamic belief makes all Muslims violent. This is manifestly not the case. There are many millions of peaceful Muslims in the world. What I do say is that the call to violence and the justification for it are explicitly stated in the sacred texts of Islam. Moreover, this theologically sanctioned violence is there to be activated by any number of offenses, including, but not limited to, adultery, blasphemy, homosexuality, and apostasy, that is to leave Islam. Those who tolerate this intolerance do so at their peril. As someone who has known what it is to live without freedom, I watch in amazement as those who call themselves liberals and progressives, people who claim to believe so fervently in individual liberty and minority rights, make common cause with the forces in the world that manifestly pose the greatest threat to that very freedom and those very minorities. In 2014, I was invited to accept an honorary degree from Brandeis University for the work I have done on behalf of women's rights in the Muslim world. That invitation was withdrawn after professors and students protested my criticism of Islam. My subsequent disinvitation, as it came to be called, was no favor to Muslims. Just the opposite. By labeling critical examination of Islam as inherently racist, we make the chances of reformation far less likely. There are no limits on criticism of Christianity at American universities or anywhere else for that matter. Why should there be of Islam? Instead of contorting Western intellectual traditions so as not to offend our Muslim fellow citizens, we need to defend both those traditions and the Muslim dissidents who take great risks to promote them. We should support these brave men and women in every way possible. Imagine a platform for Muslim dissidents that communicated their message through YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. These are the Muslims we should be supporting for our sake as much as for the sake of Islam. In the Cold War, the West celebrated dissidents such as Alexander Solzhenitsyn, Andrei Sakharov, and Vaclav Havel, who had the courage to challenge the Soviet system from within. Today, there are many dissidents who challenge Islam, but the West either ignores them or dismisses them as not representative. This is a grave mistake. Reformers such as Tawfiq Hamid, Asra Nomani, and Zuhi Jasser, and many others must be supported and protected. They should be as well known as Solzhenitsyn, Sakharov, and Havelwar in the 1980s. If we do in fact support political, social, and religious freedom, then we cannot in good conscience give Islam a free pass on the grounds of multicultural sensitivity. We need to say to Muslims living in the West, if you want to live in our societies, to share in the material benefits, then you need to accept that our freedoms are not optional. Islam is at a crossroads of reformation or self-destruction. But so is the West. I'm Ayan Hirsi Ali of Harvard University for Prager University.
Man, she nails it. I mean, she absolutely nails it. And she gives great descriptions, too. You know, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, you know, being a dissident who spoke out against communism. And yet you have the Muslim Brotherhood led by the con artists that care, who excuse the Islamic terrorism, who excuse the Islamic jihadists, who don't mention it, and then quickly play the victim card. And they dismiss people like Tawfiq Hamid and Zuhdi Jasser, and also the lady that you know quite well. What's her name? She started the women's protection services. Oh my gosh, I went totally blank.
Mm. Yeah, I know who you're talking about, and these are reformers, Muslim reformers, and but there's another side to that. I kind of have a little bit of a differing view than here, Seattle, is that these Muslim reformers, they talk about an Islam that doesn't exist because Islam, by its doctrine, cannot reform itself. Now, that doesn't mean that there's followers of Islam who want to reform and see a kinder, gentler Islam, and they want to literally separate the Islamic law from the actual doctrine itself. But it just, their numbers are few. I wish they were more successful, but they're not. And comparing them to Solzhenitsyn, they didn't really do much to change and bring down Russia or communism. It took Ronald Reagan to do it.
Right.
Through space war, through Star Wars and the threat of violence, just being a dissident just means that you're a voice out in the wilderness. And I think that a lot of these Muslim reformers actually do a great disservice because for good-hearted American people who are always looking out for the underdog and believe that people can change if they want to, and that people just generally want to be nice to other people, I think it gives them a false sense of security, the message from the Zuhdi Jassers and these reformers that Islam can reform itself and Islam can be a good religion of peace. But there's no, I don't know, in 1,400 years, there's no glimpse or record of that ever happening. And I think it gives people a false sense of security that Islam can actually reform itself. So they believe that the Zuhdi Jassers, the Hirsi Alis, are representatives of Islamic doctrine and theology. But if they were in Afghanistan, they would be on the Taliban's kill list, and their voices would be snuffed out in no time at all.
Without a doubt. And you said that very well. And the one thing that I thought was kind of contradictory with Hirsi is the Islamic doctrine. The Islamic doctrine is the word of Allah, which can't be changed. And she was right. She's absolutely right when she said that the violence is expressed in the Quran. You can look to chapter 4, verse 71. Are you a believer? Go to war in separate groups or go to war altogether. 484, go to war for the sake of Allah. Lay not burdens on any but yourself and provoke the believers. And it's exactly what ISIS has done, Al-Qaeda has done, what the Taliban does. They provoke the believers. And it's, we're seeing the Islamic Jihad attacks, you know, all over the world, from Germany to New Zealand, to the United States, to Great Britain, to Sweden. Go to war for the sake of Allah. Lay not burdens on any but yourself and provoke the believers. Now, you would have to extract these verses from the Quran. Do you scrap the entire chapter 9? You know, chapter 9, 5, basically, and you know, the person that says it well is Usama Dakdak. 9, 5, it actually abrogates 124 verses of the Quran. And chapter 9, 5 states, so when the forbidden months are passed, so kill the polytheists wherever you find them and take them as captives and besiege them and lay wait for them with every kind of ambush. So if they repent and they perform the prayer and give legal alms, so leave their way free. So we are, you know, chapter 9-5 is being exercised right now by the Taliban in Afghanistan with these planes that are being grounded. Besiege them, kill the polytheists wherever you find them. You have the Taliban going house to house in Afghanistan. They are laying wait, and now there will be a ransom for these people who are on planes that are grounded at Mazar-e Sharif Airport. So, exactly. So Alan, your opinion. If you want to reform Islam, do you extract the entire chapter 9? Do you take away 471? Do you extract 484? Do you take out 885? I mean, you have to go through the word of Allah and then take this out. And what does that do? Does that make you an apostate then?
Yes. And a blasphemer, and committing shirk because you're putting yourself above Allah. And that is the greatest crime of any of those that you've mentioned. That is an instant death sentence in Islamic law. So I think Muhammad he shored up that loophole pretty quick. He was a smart guy.
Yeah, he was. I mean, so, and now does the fatwa end? Noni Darwish, that's who I was thinking of. So Noni Darwish converted. She's a Protestant Christian. And what about Waleed Shubat? You know, would Waleed be welcomed back in? He converted. And, you know, he's now on, I think he's on Newsmax. He was on Fox for a while. Now he's on Newsmax giving expert commentary. But yet he's rejected by the so-called mainstream media. But here are two individuals who know Islam intimately. Here, CLE knows Islam intimately. Hell, she lived in Mecca, the home of Islam. She experienced the brutality of Islam with, you know, the clitorectomy. And yet somehow the left continues to sanitize what Islam truly means. And what the intentions are. And now we're back to square one again, I think. We're 20 years later, okay? September 11th, what is that, Saturday? Sunday? Yeah, Saturday. It's going to be September 11th. 20 years ago, it's hard to believe, two decades, 20 years ago, America was attacked. And we've come full circle. And we're back to square one again. And you have the con artists of care who play the victim card at every turn, yet they don't call out Islamic terrorists. They don't call out Islamic terrorism. They rather, you know, bring up the false accusations and call everybody an Islamophobe and a hater. And as long as they keep funneling money to certain organizations, their agenda gets out. And they have nothing in common with the United States other than using the First Amendment to destroy the First Amendment. And so they're very coy. They understand how to play the game. And, you know, here they come from the Islamic Association for Palestine, who was shut down by the federal government for raising money for terrorist organization. And they founded CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations. And now they build themselves as this the largest Muslim civil rights organization. And nobody challenges them, you know. And again, I go back 2 years later, a man who was supposedly perverting Islam, al-Baghdadi, killing American soldiers, killing Americans, killing the Yazidis, raping women, imprisoning women, human trafficking. And, you know, he assumes room temperature. And you think that would, if you were truly an organization that believed in some sort of Western value system, you would applaud that individual. But being good Muslims, as the Muslim Brotherhood is, you don't acknowledge it. And it never happened. So 2 years later, you have, you know, the con artists that care are silent. And then they laud the incestuous Ilhan Omar, and they don't question her. On September 11th, some people did something. You know, back in September 11, 2001, some people did something. Oh, well, let's brush this off. Okay, well, some people did something. I mean, this is it's incredible what we were seeing just 20 years removed. 20 years removed.
Well, all I know is 20 years later, in Afghanistan, we are seeing Al-Qaeda, who made 9/11 happen. We're seeing Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, ISIS, and the Haqqani Network all joining forces to take over Afghanistan. All four have interlocking directorates. They have leaders on all four of these tribes, and for the moment, they're all working together to get rid of the Americans, which they were successful. And now they're joining with the Chinese and calling Chinese their primary partners to rebuild Afghanistan. And I read that, and I'm like, what the hell have we been doing in Afghanistan for 20 years except for building schools, building hospitals, building roads, helping build their infrastructure and getting them out of the 14th century at the cost of trillions over 20 years?
Yeah, right.
And they just said, screw you, Team America. We're going to embrace China, and now they're going to help us to rebuild what the Americans screwed up, and we left with a whimper.
And how about what Sue from New Mexico said last week? Where are the Bushes? Laura Bush built a school, right? This is supposed to be a heralded for building a school in Afghanistan, and It's done.
School for girls.
Yeah,
girls.
It's done. And there's nothing out of the bushes. Nothing. They're silent.
No, and the students tried to escape, but they got captured. We still don't know what happened to them. Not to mention the teachers, anyone associated with the Laura Bush School, are probably hunted down, in jail, or dead. And Laura Bush and President Bush have been silent. Shame on them. Shame, total shame. Do absolutely fantastic work, and then when it comes time and that work gets destroyed by the Taliban, they can't open their pie holes for 2 seconds and complain.
Yeah, I mean, hey, wasn't this something that was started under G.W. Bush's term in office? I mean, this is something that should be applauded and lauded, and yet there's nothing. Nothing.
No, nothing. But I guess we'll see how it plays out. Instead, the news would rather talk about sea level rise becoming a hazard for inland areas.
Oh, hey, that's important. My goodness,
yeah,
that's really important.
I read
important.
That, and I was nervous. I was nervous these sea level rise may appear to be a problem only for coastal residents. I'm not that, but a hazard that comes with the awesome views and easy access to the beach. But neighborhoods of, you know, 20 miles inland are starting to feel the impact as the Atlantic Ocean's higher elevations make it harder for drainage canals to keep them dry. The problem showed up last year in Tropical Storm Ida when floodwaters remain in the southwest Broward neighborhoods for days, partly because of the elevated ocean. That scares me. And it should concern you.
You know what?
I'm surprised you haven't talked about that ever.
Well, you know, I have an opinion on that, believe it or not. And actually, I was talking to you. Yeah. You beat me to the punch. I was talking to a relative about that, and he looked at me and said, we do have an issue with climate change. It's called the sun. And it's like, I looked at him and went, he goes, yeah. He says, we can't control the sun. You know,
what?
If the sun sends off solar flares, it changes how the our atmosphere and our climate is going to change. He goes, we have no control over that. You know, so to sit here and say that man is changing how the climate change in the United States, or even for the world for that matter, we can't control the sun. Now, if we can find a way to control the sun, we might be able to control the climate. But we're going to be throwing trillions of dollars at a fictitious and man made up event. And one other thing, I was talking to an old timer. And we were talking about, I made a comment to like, hey, I got some swampland in Florida to sell you. He goes, oh, well, there's no more swampland. There's very few swampland left in Florida. They've put cement over it. He goes, you know, back in the 1950s, he goes, well, what about all the, you know, the weather changing and the lightning strikes and all this? He goes, you know, back in the 50s, when lightning used to strike, it would strike vacant land and kill cattle. It would strike vacant land and we would not know anything of it. He says, but today, he goes, in Florida, he says, we have all kinds of housing and population. And think about it. He says, you have 1,000 people a day moving to Florida. He says, do you think that the overcrowdedness in South Florida is an issue with these canals that are dry, that supposedly are having are not holding? There's so much population that we're building over this swampland. We're building over land that used to be vacant and used to acquire that water and allow for the dissemination of water through, you know, vacant land. He says, but they're building in every square inch now. He goes, I'm not surprised that that building collapsed in South Florida. When you go down that beach, it's just one condo after another. And at some point in time, the sand starts shifting. And unless you're on top of that, and unless you're willing to spend, you know, a couple of million dollars in the case of that Santee building, it was $17 million to renovate it and bring it back to code. He goes, you're going to have this condition all the way up and down the east coast of Florida, wherever there's building. He says, but you go back 40, 50 years ago, there weren't as many buildings. And so we weren't having this issue. But you have 1,000 people a day, 2,000 people a day moving into Florida. Is where are they going to go? It's like, that kind of made sense.
Interesting viewpoint.
Well, you know, these old sages, they know, you know, because I'd be plowing land, you know, back in the 60s and, you know, cloud come over and lightning would hit and it would hit a tree. Today, you can't, that same land I was plowing, there's 5 home subdivisions in there. And guess what? If a lightning strike hits, it's going to hit a house. It's not going to hit a tree in the middle of nowhere. He's right. He's absolutely right. So the progress and the building certainly is leading to it. Again, you've got all these homes and all this building on lakefront and waterfront property, and of course there's going to be more devastation. So it's not climate change. It's the fact that man is intruding upon this land. And of course you're going to have issues. You know, a hurricane goes through, you know, the Keys, And it went through Key Largo, and there was nothing on the beachfront. And today, you know, 60 years later, a hurricane of the same magnitude goes over Key Largo. There's all kinds of buildings, houses, and population. And, of course, it's going to be devastation. So. But the left wing loves this ruse. They love this green scam. And I'm not talking about Alan Green scam. I'm talking about green scam.
Well, now they've got every you just make up a name for an environmental group and you do a study on global warming, global cooling, man-made climate change, or just climate change, and there's millions, I mean millions, tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars of taxpayer grant money ready for you if you produce documents with the right conclusion that there is man-made climate change and that we need to fix it. And if you come up with those conclusions, you are in. If you don't, you're out. No more money for you.
Well, you know what? I'm going to apply for that grant because I have a book I can write, and it could be one page, climate change, how to change it. Chapter 1, page 1, the sun. Page 2, the end.
Well, now with Labor Day on us, comrade, in the news, nearly 9 million to lose all jobless benefits. And those jobless benefits, as I'm sure most people have heard, is about $300 a week, and that has kept people out of the workforce. So that will soon be coming to an end, and it's creating a lot of anxiety with a lot of the, less ambitious, lazy, couch potatoes. Well, actually economically smart because they know that they can sit home, do nothing, and make $1,200 a year tax-free. Why bust your ass for 40 hours a week or 50 hours a week to make the same amount of money in a lot of cases? So now they're going to have to work, and now they're going to find jobs, and hopefully they'll be there for them. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Well, it is going to be interesting because, you know, Belly put in the chat room earlier, FedEx is having problems with planes taking off because they don't have staff. And will these people who have been conditioned for the last 18 months to sit home and to reap the rewards of taxpayers and to collect $600 a week, $24,000 a year, $26,000 a year, $30,200 a year, which is $15 an hour, by the way, in most states. The government has conditioned people to believe this and to think that that's their worth, when in fact it would be nice to just go out and get a job, and that's your self-worth. You know, but with inflation now on the rise as a result of very poor economic policy on the part of Biden and hapless Harris, will $15 an hour be enough? You know, is $18 an hour enough? How about housing? The cost of transporting goods now has increased dramatically since January 20th, 2021. So that means that the cost of goods have risen. We're seeing it at the grocery store. We're seeing, you know, prices 20, 30% higher this year already. And, look at beef prices, look at food prices, just look at your transportation costs. I mean, my goodness, you know, you go to fill up your tank of your car with a tank of gas, and January 20th, it was, you know, $22, and today it's $32. And you take that $10 out of the budget a week, that's $40 a month, and all of a sudden, and you're spending 20% more at the grocery store, and you know, at where does it stop? And there's no end in sight because the poor economic plan by this administration and this government, they've incentivized laziness. Now, what's going to happen? Nancy Pelosi going to wake up and close her refrigerator after eating her $13 a pint of ice cream, and then pass another stimulus package to extend unemployment benefits? Because you know what? Miraculously, we have another spike or another variant. There's another variant out there. And you know what? Get vaccinated. So now that people are vaccinated and those that are being hospitalized are those that are vaccinated. And those that are transmitting the China virus are those that are vaccinated. And so they can't go back to work. They have to wear a mask. And I'm afraid to go back to work. So I'll sit in my basement like Joe Biden, and I need money. So give me another $300 a week. So now will Nancy Pelosi call Congress back in, the House in, to extend the benefits because she knows that schmuck in the Senate is going to go ahead and pass it because there are not enough people in the Senate with backbone to say enough is enough. Like, where the hell are we getting these trillions of dollars? Okay? The fiscal irresponsibility by this government speaks volumes. And now this is going to be a test, Al. We've already seen it with the eviction issues, okay, where Biden overstepped his constitutional boundaries, and suddenly that's okay. What's going to happen? We already saw it in Texas, where somebody sued the state, and the courts sided with the unemployed and said, you know, you have to continue that $300 a week stipend. So, you know, I mean, and of course, taxpayers continue to pay this. And in the meantime, you've got flights, planes being canceled and flights being canceled by FedEx. You've got flight delays by all kinds of airlines around the United States because they don't have employees. You've got help wanted signs all around the United States. You know, they're call up for a pizza at Domino's Pizza an hour and 45 minutes later. Why? The manager is so frustrated. We don't have drivers. Nobody wants to work. Well, why should they work? They're getting an additional $300 a week off of the $300 a week they're getting in unemployment benefits. So that's $600 a week for sitting on your ass. But we have to feel sorry for them. We must feel sorry. 9 million people will lose their jobs. 9 million.
Good.
Wow. Yeah. You know, if we truly had a plan, and if we truly had a fiscally responsible government, and we haven't had a fiscally responsible government probably since Truman. Maybe even earlier than that. I mean, it's incredible. It's like these people, these human beings found a way to tap into this piggy bank and just continue to rape the piggy bank and then expect that down the road, the future society will pay for this, but let's entice people not to work by giving them an extra stipend. And then they've conditioned people to believe that the government is their mommy, their daddy, their grandma, their grandpa, and that the government is the cure-all. And we see when the government has ineffective and inept leadership, what happens? Chaos erupts, chaos ensues. And that's what we have right now. We have chaos. We have a chaotic, inept leadership in the White House and certainly in Congress. And when they choose to be silent, they find ways to not say a word. And sadly, they've chosen to be silent during a really chaotic time. The southern border is in chaos in the United States. Afghanistan's in chaos. You've got an economy that is very fragile right now. And now you're going to add 9 million people to that chaos. And do you do like Obama did? Well, since it was Obama-Biden, you probably do. You take 9 million people off of the unemployment dole immediately. And guess what? The unemployment rate just dropped to 4.0%. You watch. You watch. The unemployment claims will go to, let's just say, 400,000 unemployment. Or they'll create 70,000 jobs. That's right. There you go. The unemployment numbers come out. They created 70,000 jobs, and the unemployment rate will drop by 0.3% or 0.2%. Why? Because 9 million people now came off the unemployment dole, and what they did is they erased them. Just like what's happened in Afghanistan, you sweep it under the proverbial White House prayer rug. They're going to sweep this under the rug as if these people didn't exist, and then cook the books. Yes, I'm very jaded.
No, it's a very realistic view. It's human nature. You just gave an explanation of human nature.
Oh, it's awful. It really is. I never thought we'd see this, and how rapidly it was done, all by using a pandemic in the Chinese virus, and it continues. It continues. Vilify those that are unvaccinated, when in fact the vaccinated are the biggest transmitter of the Chinese virus.
Yep, and now the double vaccinated are going to have to get a third booster shot. So if you did everything like you should, not necessarily for yourself, but for the betterment of the community and mankind, because you care that much about society and the world and not killing your family and your friends and your neighbors. So you got the shot, you got both vaccines, and now you got one booster shot. Well, now it's time to get another one because everything you did probably just didn't work as good as advertised. Are you going to feel good about it? Are you going to get that booster shot after all the vaccine shots that you've already gotten?
Well, the fraud Fauci says the booster shots could help ward off, fend off other variants of the virus. Oh, okay. Well, you told us if we got the vaccination, we wouldn't have to wear a mask.
Hey, I'll keep the natural antibodies myself, and if I get sick, I'm going to go on the ivermectin, the hydroxychloroquine, the Z-Pak, and the zinc, and the boron, and all that other stuff, and that will hopefully, at least with all of my friends and acquaintances, that has tapped down the effects of the COVID into something where you don't have to go to the hospital.
Well stated, my friend. Listen, this week, Saturday, is September 11th. 20-year anniversary, where America was attacked by 19 Muslim men, financed by Saudi Arabia, trained by Al-Qaeda to attack America. 2,977 people died. 2,753 people died in the Twin Towers. 184 people died at the Pentagon. 40 people perished at Shanksville, Pennsylvania Field. I don't think we've learned a damn thing. But, Let's keep those people in your prayers. Thank those first responders who did the heroic thing. 20 years, September 11th, 2021. Tomorrow, Eric from Kafiristan with the Cross and the Crescent at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Wednesday, Hank Jones will be back with Poly Sports. Update us on some certain college football and other politics. Thursday, Paul Sutliff with the Sutliffian Report, also the author of The Cancer of Civilization Jihad. Go to Amazon.com and purchase it. Paul wrote a great book. Friday, Andrew Harrod, Conservative Casual Friday at 12 p.m. Eastern Time. He is going to be talking about 9/11 and the anniversary. Saturday, Osama Dakduk and the beautiful Christie revealing the truth about Islam, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And Sunday, Eric from Kafiristan will be back with his interfaith dialogue, the real interfaith dialogue, at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. And Al and I will be back next Monday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Check out other shows on Blog Talk Radio, including G-Ski and Dave, Airwaves America, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. And the wonderful Annie, our deplorable radio chick with Southern Sense Talk Radio, and with our great co-host, Curtis, 1 p.m. Eastern Time Fridays. Cheap, Simple Facts of Life, Tuesdays, 3 p.m. Pacific Time. If you want a break from politics, go to Simone Nicole's show, Wednesdays, 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Spreaker, Spreaker.com. It's a good self-help show. It's a great great way to learn about eating and have you exercise today. And then also on Thursdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, Audrey Russo with Real Talk. Go to AudreyRusso.com. She's a great friend of the show. She has a great show. She has great guests. I want to thank Bigfoot, our big patriot, Bring It On Boy, Ducky Northwest, our big fat soft underbelly, the Alaskan Boyd, Boy, and of course, we've got Sue from New Mexico. Thank you so much. Go to www.bigfootsplace.blogspot.com. A great blog spot. Al, any other parting words?
Say a prayer for those being held hostage in Afghanistan.
Oh,
adios,
yes,
amigos.
They're not just grounded, they're hostages. Be safe out there, folks. Thank you for joining us. God bless you. Happy Labor Day.
It was my way.
That's all, folks.
Oh, great timing.
That was pretty good.
That was on the screws, baby. Boy,
oh
that
my
went
God!
Fast that 2 hours. Holy cow! Where
it did? Maybe
so
because it's Labor Day.
Up.
I don't know.
A lot in the news. Sports were great. What a great sports weekend! And
oh, I know.
The news is the news. But
well. You know, a couple of things. I think that headline that you read about, you know, planes being grounded, I mean, if that's offensive. You know, it's mm-hmm. offensive, it's misleading, and it's really sad that the partisan politics comes into play, even with the botched Afghanistan. And to describe the scene at Mazar Sharif Airport as being Taliban grounding evacuee planes, it's sickening, and it, to continue to sanitize this buffoon who's absolutely botched the entire evacuation, and what's even more disgusting, Al, the narrative for three weeks was anybody who wants to leave Afghanistan can leave, and that's the way they condition people for 2.5 to 3 weeks. Everybody, the State Department spokesman, Baghdad Bob Jinsaki, and the buffoon himself reading the teleprompter, if you want to leave Afghanistan, you can leave. And it was the furthest thing from the – it was just a soundbite. It's a meaningless soundbite, and it's offensive. And that to for you to read that headline, Taliban grounds evacuee planes. I mean, that sounds so simple. I mean, was the air conditioning system out? I mean, did they ground it because they need to clean the windshield? I mean, why were they grounded? Oh, my God.
Yep, it's beyond words. And I can't even imagine. It's been days. I don't even know how many days, but they said days. It could have been a week. Can you imagine being stuck on that airplane?
It's been at least 6 days.
No air conditioning? Hmm?
It's been at least 6 days.
Yeah, no food, no water, food. I would imagine, yeah. Or limited water. I know what President Trump would have done, or I like to think what President Trump would have done and would have likely done.
It wouldn't have gotten to this.
No, I think that airport would be under American control right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Bagram would be open. Americans would be controlling the airport. The ISIS would have been repelled. The Taliban would have been repelled. They wouldn't have even gotten past Herat. And move south to Kandahar or move east or to Mazar Sharif. It wouldn't have happened.
You know why?
Why?
Because we would have had a contingent still in Bagram.
Right.
A small contingent on Bagram. We're just going to stay there and we winded down operations, but we're going to keep a small contingent here just to keep, just because, for another few years or whatever.
But logistically, for one, I mean, look how close it is to Iran. Look at the proximity to China. And look how China is easily walking into Afghanistan now. You know, the prospect is $3 trillion of minerals that could be paid to the Taliban. And you've got the Chinese going in with their infrastructure team and building roads. Now, they start with one location, very easily, one location. And that's going to lead into many other locations. And then as the Taliban defaults on this, as if the Taliban's going to continue, you know, paying top dollar, but it's okay for the Chinese because that's even more land that they could acquire. And there's not a damn thing that's going to be done. The United Nations has done nothing. They've been absolutely useless. The United States is done with Afghanistan. Matter of fact, they're done with Afghanistan so much so that Americans have been stranded and there have been Americans left behind. I mean, a U.S. congressman paying a mercenary team to extract Americans where the State Department denied any type of rescue efforts. The State Department denied. So, again, a congressman made a plea to the State Department on August the 31st to help the 7 busloads of Americans, American women, 7 busloads, and the State Department denied that help, denied the request. And where's the media? Not reporting a damn lick on it. Nothing. Zero. Zilch. Nada. Nothing. Nothing. Wow.
It's a mind blower.
and this is from Bigfoot's, okay, www.bigfootsplace.blogspot.com. There's a story from the Daily Caller. Baghdad Bob Jinsaki dukes it out with Ducey, saying it's irresponsible to say Americans are stranded in Afghanistan. Can you believe that? It's irresponsible to say that Americans are stranded in Afghanistan. There's how many plane loads? You say 4 plane loads of Americans, evacuees, who are stranded at Mazar Sharif Airport, held hostage, but it's irresponsible to say Americans are stranded. It's irresponsible to say that Americans are being sought out like dogs, tracked down like dogs by the Taliban terrorists going door to door looking for Americans. But it's irresponsible to say that. This is how phony and fraudulent the Biden administration is. I mean, this is sick. This is absolutely sick.
Seditious. I think.
Yeah. Thank you.
I think we've reached the level of sedition.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's only sedition if the Republicans make it sedition, or make the case that it's seditious. But with Lindsey Graham, I don't see that happening with, I don't know. I just don't see it happening with Republican leadership.
No. It's a one-party system. They're all of the same ilk. There's a few that step outside the box, but they're summarily beaten down. But, yeah, there's a few. Mm-hmm. I mean, just remove them from any type of House assignments or Senate assignments. And then, of course, the Senate's always measured. You know, they're all the good old boys system there. And, you know, they'll give time to, you know, the Mitt Romneys, and the House will give time to the Liz Cheneys. You know, she'll talk about how it's kind of, she's an expert out there, Liz Cheney. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, she's, you know, as long as she kind of beats down any Republicans and Trump, she's fine. But, you know, Marjorie Greene Taylor, don't give her anything. Babbitt, don't give her any forums or platforms, you know.
Well, you saw that story with Marjorie Greene Taylor when she said Islam is not a religion of peace, and they went after her. That was that was fighting words. I think we talked about that a little bit. And then you got Liz Cheney. The Democrats brought her on to lead the January 6th inquiry for the Democrats, and she took it.
Is
her dad on board with everything she's doing? Because I like Dick Cheney.
Oh, I believe so.
There's something about him I liked. I liked his style. There's something about him that I liked, but I guess he's as bad as his daughter. I don't know. Maybe I was fooled.
Hey, I'm probably in your same corner as you are. I liked his measuredness. I like his strength. I liked his talk, as a matter of fact. But you're right. I mean, have we been duped by the establishment? I don't know.
Duped in a big way. But for me, I mean, yeah, I like the guy, and then I find out that he's raised his offspring as Satan, and he's helping her. He's certainly not going against her publicly.
No, not at all. Nope. Nothing to say that President Trump was correct in beating down ISIS and not, you know, and having conditions. You know, if anybody could come back and say anything, you know, say something about what President Trump's deal was, it would be Dick Cheney with regards to conditions being put in place. And you know, Biden has made this and his handlers have made this about being absolute. And there was nothing absolute about the Trump exit strategy. There was nothing absolute. Biden made it absolute. And again, I think I firmly believe now all this goes back to Jerry Nadler's How We Resist Trump. And there's a concerted effort to demean, demoralize, and debase Trump in every way, shape, or form. And the number one goal was what with Jerry Nadler? And that was to reduce his support. They're doing everything they can, the establishment, led by this buffoon Biden, in trying to beat down Trump's support. And I believe that they can't stand, the establishment can't stand to see 25,000 people go to a Trump rally to this day. And Biden goes out and they've got, you know, 12 people, 40 people. I mean, and there's empty rooms, so much so that they have to change camera angles to give the appearance that the room is full. And then when they pan back, like what happened in Atlanta, there was maybe 80 people, 90 people there. So, yeah, I think it's a concerted effort to continue to go after Trump and portray Trump's policies as being reckless. And you've got Biden going out there and saying it's absolute. There was nothing absolute about his policies.
Nope.
I mean, does
not make it true.
No, do you believe that Trump would have allowed the Taliban even to make any headway into Herat without pushing back on them?
Especially no, and especially not that one clip from 2017 says that he was already thinking about this the first year into his presidency, even with all the other nonsense that was going on, and there was a lot to distract
him.
And he had that on his plate as a problem that needed to be solved in 2017. That clip just blew me away because I had not heard it before until a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, me either. And I'll tell you, it makes the Trump presidency even more impressive because while the Democrat Party was going after Trump with this phony and trumped up Russian collusion, he actually was thinking about other things. And it was like he knew it was phony, he knew it was false, and he wasn't going to allow it to consume him. And he was doing things behind the scenes, you know, moving the embassy, the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And I'm sure all the contingencies to that change. And then we find out that he actually had an exit strategy for Afghanistan, but with conditions. And looking at all the scenarios that could occur and taking into account that in 2011, the feckless Obama and Biden administration hastily moved out of Iraq. And look how Iraq collapsed to the point where President Trump had to clean up Iraq in 2017 and bomb the living shit out of ISIS and destroy ISIS, because that was not even an issue with Obama Biden. They didn't do they were complacent, and they allowed ISIS to materialize and to foster and to grow larger, to the point where they were killing not only American soldiers, but the Yazidis and our allies. And Trump put a stop to that. And it just doesn't make sense.
You figure it out. Let me know.
All right. I'm going to try. So.
All right. Well, hey, great show.
Hey,
that two hours went very quick.
It did. Have a nice evening, Sue. You take care. Have a nice evening as well, and we'll talk to you next week, Al.
All right. Take care. Have a great week. Night, night.
Oh.
That's all, folks.
Sorry about that. Didn't mean to cut you off.
No problem. Bye-bye.
Ciao. Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio.